The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
Do you remember the Pulse nightclub shooter? He was an angry ideologue. He killed 49 people, injured 53 more, and he was driven by hate. He was the Pulse killer. When he walked into the nightclub and opened fire, just before, he called 911 and swore allegiance to ISIS. Now, after the gunfight, police shot him to death. In the days after the shooting, we learned that the shooter's wife most likely had helped him plot the massacre. Now, don't forget these truths, because the trial of the shooter's wife has sought to erase them. Yesterday, her lawyers filed for a mistrial after news broke that the shooter's father was an FBI informant for more than a decade right up to the shooting. The media has also focused on the nonchalance that the shooter's father had in reaction to all the warning signs. Do you remember how weird and creepy that was? Now, perhaps he's going to face his day in court, but for now, it is important that we do not lose sight of the shooter's wife. This case is expected to wrap up this Wednesday, and let's hope that this legal circus doesn't overshadow justice that is due. When the police entered the Pulse nightclub the night of June 12, 2016, they saw bodies and they heard the constant buzz of cell phones ringing. Frantic calls from family, from friends, worried about the person that they loved. Calls that would remain forever unanswered.
It's Tuesday, March 27th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Well, hello, Stu.
Hello, Mr. Beck.
How are you?
Pretty well. How about yourself?
I'm hanging in there. It's been a bad winter for colds. I got a cold again.
Do you? And
yeah, it's nasty.
Yeah, the allergy thing has been pretty brutal. I think it's potentially, look, we see what Vladimir Putin's doing around the world. I assume it's connected. I mean, you see what he did in the UK?
Holy cow, I never even thought of that.
Yeah.
Never even thought of that.
I mean, it certainly makes perfect sense, I'm willing to jump to any conclusion if it's mildly plausible.
I saw it on Facebook. I'm reading a great book. We're trying to get the author on today. I'm reading The Kill Process, and it's about basically a Facebook, and they're having exactly the same problems. I mean, this thing is, it's amazing how well this is timed. But it's Facebook called something else, and they're just taking all this bulk data and they're telling their customers one thing, they're doing another with it. Customers are like, I want to do something, but I can't get out of this because then I don't have any way to really communicate and keep friends. It's my only choice. And it shows how easily this data can be used and manipulated. The main character is actually somebody who was a product of spousal abuse, and she finally killed her husband. She did it in self-defense. Now she's really kind of screwed up, and she knows how to get into the Facebook, backdoor, and she's using all of the data to track people, find out who is depressed, who might be having, problems with an abusive spouse. And then she uses all of the algorithms and everything else to go out and kill them. It's really
wow,
fascinating.
It's only slightly darker than the actual Facebook story.
It really is. Only slightly.
Slightly darker. The Facebook thing's interesting in that, think of where we've come on that. You remember when Facebook first started like taking over and becoming a big thing? Everyone kind of talked about it as like, these things come and go so quickly. Mm-hmm. We forget that it's such a huge thing now and such a huge part of so many people's lives. You forget that what happened to, like, for example, MySpace, that was a big thing for a while and then just died. And everyone was predicting that eventually the same thing is going to happen to Facebook. And now it's become such a big thing that you have some conservatives arguing that it should be treated as a utility, right? Which is another huge step, I believe,
real problem,
in the wrong direction. But now, I mean, it actually seems like this could potentially do real damage to them. And what they're doing to react to it seems to also do real damage. They're starting to try to correct problems that are really bad for them in the media and really bad for them politically, but aren't necessarily problems for their users. You know, like people who go, the fake news problem, for example, mm-hmm. like as a good steward to the community, right? Mm-hmm. They should be aggressive to try to stop that from happening. Mm-hmm. However, that's not what their people, their users are asking them to do. They love sharing the crap out of fake mm-hmm. stories. They love it.
Mm-hmm. And I don't like the fact that they're going to tell me who I can trust, yeah. who I don't trust.
Yeah.
I don't like it at all.
It's a weird line. And now you have all these companies who have built these giant Facebook audiences to, mm-hmm. you know, write their stories and mm-hmm. link to them and everything. And they're changing the algorithm to a point that now you're pretty much only seeing pictures of your friends' kids. You don't like your friends' kids. Your friends' kids annoy the hell out of you, and you don't want to see their faces that often. Maybe when a new one's born, you get a couple shots, and that's about it.
That might just be you.
I think it's more common than people want to admit. Because, yeah, you want to keep in touch with your friends. You want a touch of that, right?
Right.
You know,
you have to read this book, because you will love this book. It's everything that you're saying is in this book. It's like, look, the point of this book is, and I want to talk to the author. Why haven't you created this competitor to Facebook? Because the writer is a Silicon Valley guy. Mm. And I don't know why they haven't created it, because he's like, look, you should be able to control the algorithm yourself. You should say, I want fewer friends, fewer pictures of my friends. I want 80% this, 20% this. You know, you could change the algorithm yourself, so you are in control. So Facebook doesn't have control of it. You do.
It's interesting, because what Facebook and so many of these sites have done mm-hmm. is a progressive approach,
yep.
as you might expect. I mean, mm-hmm. I know it's not the government, so it's different. They can do whatever they want with their product, mm-hmm. but they're assigning to you the algorithm you deserve.
And it gives them ultimate control.
It gives them control.
You went there because you thought you had control because of what you like and et cetera, et cetera. But that's not turning out to be the way it is.
Yeah, well, I remember there was a big change in the Instagram algorithm, which instead of giving you the pictures the people you follow post in order, it would give you some sort of algorithm response that gives you the things you might have missed from 4 days ago. And, you know, and didn't put them in chronological order anymore, and you didn't get every post. So even if you chose to follow someone, you didn't necessarily get those in your feed.
It's the same. That's the same in Facebook. You follow me.
Facebook owns it. Yeah.
Yeah. Facebook. You follow me on Facebook. You don't get everything I post.
And it's like, well, I clicked yes.
Yeah.
I'm here because I wanted to, listen to mm-hmm. Glenn Beck and his whatever thing he's spouting today. I mean, that's why I clicked yes.
Wait.
And I think,
wait a minute,
I do think that like they are now coming to a point where in reaction to media criticism, in reaction to political criticism, that they are now trying to solve problems that their users aren't identifying as problems.
No.
And that's not a good future for a company.
The government.
Right.
The government is identifying the problems, and Zuckerberg is now laying down and saying, maybe we should be regulated. No, you shouldn't. No, you should not be regulated. And, you know, he's lost $5 billion in the last 10 days. $5 billion in his own personal, $75 billion Facebook has lost in the last 10 days. So that's a lot of money to pour down the drain. And you kind of wonder, gee, you were thinking that you could be president of the United States. But now you're beginning to look like a pretty big weasel that has information on everyone and can manipulate. I mean, I wouldn't want you in the CIA, let alone the Oval Office. American Financing. American Financing, we want to thank them for being our sponsor this half hour. I don't know if you saw last week, but they started to raise the interest rates at the Fed, and now is the time to lock in your mortgage. If you're thinking about buying a new house, do it now. Buy a new house and lock in this lower rate of interest for your mortgage. Or if you have credit cards and they're high interest, they are only going to go up because most likely it's adjustable. And so they're going to go up. Please call and find out if you can, you have enough equity in your home to get a new home loan, and you can take all of your high interest credit cards and just pile them together so you don't have that interest rate. That interest rate could put you out. I mean, I don't know if you've ever, it's been so long since we've had interest rates going up that most people have forgotten what it's like when you have an adjustable mortgage and your interest rate starts to go up just a couple of ticks up, and you can not afford your house anymore. You can put down as little as 10% down, a second home if you wanted to buy a second home, 10%. You can get a second mortgage and consolidate all of your bills into one loan, or you can just refinance and not reset for 30 years, but 10, 15, 18 years, they'll pretty much do anything you want. And that way you can have a lower rate, but you're also not resetting for 30 years. American Financing. Call them now at 866-750-6551, 866-750-6551. It's AmericanFinancing.net. That's AmericanFinancing.net.
American Financing Corporation, NMLS 182334, www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
By the way, we're getting some phone calls. Yes, we actually still have phones. Isn't that crazy? So old-timey. The name of the book that I'm reading, we were just talking about, is by William Hertling, and it's called Kill Process. And I don't know why they don't build this. Maybe I'll find out. I'm not at the end yet, so maybe I'm going to find out exactly why they don't build this this competitor to Facebook. But it's interesting to see how our data is being used and how you can find out anything about anyone and manipulate them. It's really quite amazing.
And the book I'm reading is Peppa Pig's Super Noisy Sound Book. It's available at bookstores everywhere.
Right. What happens to her to Peppa in this one?
You need to read it. I will say, I'm going to give a little bit of a spoiler here. You can also listen to it because there's super noisy sounds throughout.
Wow. Okay. Is that you didn't spoil that, did you?
Well, it is. There are buttons on the outside. You can press them before you get to the part in the book where you're supposed to press them.
Okay.
Which is just
all
cheating.
Right.
It's just cheating. Why bother opening the book in the first place if you're going to do that?
So I don't know if you saw what Bain Capital said. Bain and Company released a report over the weekend called Labor 2030. Did you read this?
I did. I read the story about it.
Wow.
I did not read the entire Bain Capital.
Didn't have sounds? You can push a little.
Well, yeah, that's the problem. He just had a little like a dollar sign button go cha-ching every time you got to a number.
Here's what it says. It's predicting now that 25% of American jobs will be permanently replaced by automation and artificial intelligence by 2030. Now, here's what this means. We're 12 years away from this. And that's just, it's not going to happen overnight. It's going to start happening now. Lower wage earners are going to be hit first, and they're going to be hit the hardest. And that's because things that used to take humans to do them, it no longer with AI and really sophisticated automation, it's no longer going to take a human to do that. For instance, the burger flipper. That's already out now. Have you gone into a McDonald's lately? I mean,
we have the touchscreen ones here.
Yeah.
And you know what's great about the touchscreens at McDonald's is you can order things you'd be embarrassed to tell the person about.
Now,
like let's say, for example,
I was in a McDonald's with a touchscreen a week ago, and I cannot relate to that.
You can't
at all.
You didn't put four slices of cheese on whatever you ordered, because I did.
I
you can order an egg McMuffin, and you can just be extra cheese, extra cheese, extra cheese, extra cheese. And you don't have to say, I'd like four slices of cheese.
Well, I'm getting old and sometimes my hands shake and I don't like to correct it.
Oh, no. So did you hit multiple?
Well, yeah, I had multiple things.
You didn't mean to.
I didn't mean to. My hand was
shaking and just kept bumping the button.
Honey, I only wanted one. I thought I ordered one and it was a mix up in the machine. I didn't catch it until I'd eaten it all on the way home.
It's weird how that happens.
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird. Anyway, so the lower wage earners are going to be hit first and the hardest. This is another reason why you don't want $15 an hour minimum wage, because the more pressure point that the business feels, the more likely they are to replace you with a robot. Technology is getting better and cheaper, and machines are soon going to be able to do more cognitive type jobs that used to require humans. This according to Bain Capital. So now 25% in additional unemployment, 25% of America's jobs are going away permanently by 2030. So what does that mean? We have an unemployment rate of what, 5% now, 4%? How does the nation cope with a unemployment rate of 29%? That's the Great Depression. How do you do it? What do we do? These are the kinds of conversations that we should be having over the Stormy Daniels thing. Stormy Daniels is such a distraction. Is it really going to change anything? I talked to somebody on the left who was just as upset about this as I was yesterday. And he was saying, you know, this news cycle is ridiculous. It's a clown show on both sides. It's a clown show. We're not talking about what's really going on, the dangers that we're actually facing. I agree. This is one of them. How does a country or a world hold itself together with 29% unemployment? Because that is something we're going to have to figure out. Now, what they're talking about is a basic minimum wage, which I'm against constitutionally. I'm against in all principle. I'm against that. But what else is there? How else can we do this? Because the people who are making the robotics and the AI are going to become extraordinarily wealthy, and they are going to be the ones that hold all of the power, and we're all going to be going to them. Now, the argument is that once you take humans out of the line, for instance, once you say, well, I don't have to have a human ride a tractor. They don't have to cut the alfalfa. They don't have to stack it. They don't have to take care of the cows. They don't have to feed the cows. They don't have to slaughter the cows. Those are all done by machine. They don't have to package it. They don't have to drive it because we don't have any drivers anymore because it's automated. They can take it right to McDonald's. It's already made into a patty by automation. The patty machine takes it and puts it out on the grill. You are just touchscreen ordering it and it comes right to you. There's not a human involved. Maybe 20 in that entire line. And so the thinking is that if we have a unemployment rate, we should start thinking about having an unemployment rate and be pushing for one closest to 100 than zero.
And that's a weird way. It's a weird thing to say, but wouldn't that be great? I mean,
would it?
I think it would. At least it's something that we should morally want. I love the idea that you would not have to work and you would be able to choose to do the things that you believe are most helpful to others, to whatever you would want to do. You know, we all want more vacation, right? We all want more time off. Mm-hmm. You know, we've gone through
what do we do, Stu, with that time off?
You know,
most of us.
And usually nothing incredibly productive, I grant you. But still, that is on us, right? Like, if we... I've heard this argument before, and a lot of people make it, and I think it's a really interesting one, which is, hey, if we have no jobs, how do we find meaning in our lives? What a sad argument that is.
It's very
sad. Is
that
where you're pulling your meaning from in your life? I got a news for you. Coming in here talking to you every day, blah, 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 is that where I get mine? But it certainly shouldn't be where I get mine, right? I mean,
right.
It is a really important thing to me. But
everybody I know especially now. They're all starting to say, I want to do something that has meaning.
Right, but if you didn't have to, a lot of people are forced to do or wind up in situations where they do jobs that don't have meaning, jobs they don't want to do, and they dream about doing something else. In this scenario, you'd do it. You wouldn't have to be locked up at 40 hours a week doing something you didn't want to do.
So the question is, does man have the self-control to be self-ruled, in control of all of his appetites, and not having to work?
Oh, God, no.
Okay.
Oh, God, no.
Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
We're talking now about Bain and Company, Bain Capital, a report that they just came out with, and analysis of 2030 and where America will be in 11 or 12 years. And they say we will be at an unemployment rate, if you include today's unemployment rate, of about 29%. They said unemployment will run about 25% more or higher than it is today, because 25% of all jobs are going to be lost and never coming back. So the question is, how does one live? Mike in Florida, welcome to the Glenn Beck Program.
Thank you, Glenn. I was actually on my way to work and listening to your program, and I find it somewhat fascinating. Stu talked about how wonderful it would be to not be employed, to sit home on your butt and do nothing and maybe go brain dead.
Kind of sounds great.
I'm 75 years old, and I had a tough run in the stock market, and I'm back to work part-time, and I do enjoy it. I think it keeps me young. I'm 75, and everyone thinks I'm 55, so... But my point
That's weird because I'm 53 and everybody thinks I'm 90. But anyway, go ahead.
You got to live right.
I know. Pipe down, Mike.
You gotta quit pushing that button for putting 10 pieces of cheese on your breakfast.
I don't know what you're talking about. Those were shakes from my hand. But go ahead.
See, I was listening to your program.
Thank you.
However, my question is, as the unemployment rate rises due to automation, how are people going to survive? I mean, they have to have an income, and the only thing that I could see is unemployment benefits from our government, which, I guess that's the only answer, or seek another field, perhaps out of the... robotic generation, but I don't.
Well, Mike, the problem is that they're saying now that everything, even creative writing and artwork and filmmaking, everything that can be done will be done better by robotics and AI. So there is no safe zone. There are those things that will come later and later and later. And the first thing that go are the menial tasks, the average working Joe kind of task. Those are the ones that are going to go first. And that's why we're bringing this up now, because we have to start thinking differently. The answers are twofold so far, and that is basic minimum income, which I'm not a supporter of, but what else is there? The other is a wealth tax, which I love this. The wealth tax is, they say it'll be 1 or 2%. Stu, isn't that what they said in 1913 about the income tax?
Shockingly, yes, you're right. Yes, you remember that correctly.
And it will never go higher than 7. Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's a little higher than 7%.
Is it?
Yes, it is. So they're saying the wealth tax will not be more than 1 or 2%. And what that is like property tax, except it's for everything in your life. How much is your car worth? How much is your house worth? How much is all the crap in your house worth? And then you have to pay 1% every year in tax. So I don't know how that works, because that would stop you from consuming durable goods, things that last. You wouldn't want to buy those things, but that tax then would be given to those who don't have a job. And they say that the price of everything is going to come down so much that you won't need as much money to live.
I think more likely, at least in my opinion, than the 100% unemployment rate is that work just becomes a much smaller percentage of our life. I mean, this has already happened over the past 50 years where we've gone to a point from we've cut, depending on what country you're looking at, we've cut our working hours per year from between about 10 to 25%.
Mm-hmm.
And that has happened. Like, we used to work 50 hours a week and now we're working 40 hours a week, whatever that is. And I think that I think we chip away at that for a very long time to where, you know, it's something that you do, but it's not something that is the only thing you do.
Right. Again, that won't happen with the unskilled worker. That won't happen with the truck driver. It won't happen. I mean, you could slow it down like the unions did in past cases, but
you might do other things. You know, and this has happened throughout history.
Here's the other problem with it. If you look at it and you look at it, what's happening in France, remember, France went to a 30-hour work week. Now people are starting to say, they're starting to rebel and going, I want to work more than 30 hours. And you can't stop me from working. You can't close me down on a Sunday because, you know, it's good for the economy. I want to work. And so there's this struggle. And what they're thinking is that there's going to be a struggle with those who have jobs and those who don't have jobs. Because even though if in this utopian view that they think is coming, which I highly suspect is probably wrong, they're saying that those people that don't have a job, you're supposed to be happy you don't have a job. You could go do whatever you want at any time. I know, but what I really want to do is work on something, and you have it. And so now there's this class warfare of those who are working and not working, even though now we view this as something of, geez, I'll give up my job. When you can't have a job, you will want a job. And so you will turn against those who have a job. And there will always be someone to lead that.
This is what happens when they redesign the Matrix. And when they said, you know, all these people want to be happy, they said they wanted to get everything, and now they're still mad at each other. We had to redesign it. This is where the mincome comes in. The difference, if you think about work as something that you do, we all think about it this way now. We go to work to get the money we need to survive, right? We go to work. Now, we also might go to work, and we also might really like our job, but that's certainly not everybody, right? A lot of people go to work because they need the financial income to survive and get through the day, to feed their families, to buy insurance, all those things. If instead work was the thing you really thought you wanted to do and were passionate about, and maybe it wasn't about money, would that be an improvement? I mean, I think it would. The idea, you're right here, is if we got to that final point where it was 0% employment, and how would money flow? People are tossing around things like the mincome. Finland is currently doing an experiment on it.
There's a couple places that are doing it.
Yeah, you know, Nixon did an experiment on it in this country. That hardcore right winger Richard Nixon talked about the mincome and wanted the mincome, minimum income for doing nothing. We already have obviously a lot of programs that do this for in specific cases, but that was an idea that he tried to implement here in the United States.
And the little bit that we have done destroys people's will. It just destroys it.
I think that's true.
I mean, if they had a chance to not work, I mean, maybe it's just me, but I think on Monday, I can't wait till Saturday. I'm going to get so much done. I'm going to clean out the garage. I'm going to finally clean out my closet and get that in order. Then I'll go and do something nice with my wife. We'll go do something. And then, you know, maybe I'll paint. You know what I end up doing? Sitting on the couch and watching TV. That's what I do.
No, it's okay. True. It does tend to happen occasionally.
It does tend to happen.
Well, I had a kind of a version of this actually happen to me recently, which was my wife and kids went up to visit my in-laws in Connecticut, which left Stu all alone at his home for an entire, close to a week.
Wow.
Now, I will say, were there more movies seen in that period than the average 6 month period.
No, let me ask you it this way.
Yes.
Were there whole seasons of shows?
Now, I don't know. Maybe this is because it had been a long time since I've been in this situation, but I knocked off more off that to do list in that week than I had in the last year and a half.
Right. And that to do list was all revolving around Amazon and Netflix. Now is the time to sell your home. Coming into springtime, now is the time. You want your home sold for the most amount of money and the least hassle? Do this. Go right now to realestateagentsitrust.com. realestateagentsitrust.com. You're going to find a great real estate agent in your town. There are over 1,000 agents all over America who are just like you. Their bond is their word. They want a square deal. They're fans of the show. They share your sensibilities. And they are fully vetted and handpicked for their knowledge, their skill, and their track record. So these are the people that are actually going to get your house sold on time and for the most amount of money. Now, if you're moving to another place and you don't know who to call, don't just do it by, you know, lottery. Don't just, you know, Google real estate agents. Go to realestateagentsitrust.com and you're going to get somebody handpicked and they're going to contact you. And these people, they've already thousands of people all across the money, all across the country have put realestateagentsitrust.com to work. And they have found that they get the most amount of money for their house. They get it sold on time. There's no hassle. They feel good about it. And most people say at the end, I feel like I made a friend. Realestateagentsitrust.com. Realestateagentsitrust.com.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
Choose the news, Stu. Dead cat returns home after being buried. American exchange students in Italy start kitchen fire by cooking pasta without water.
I think I gotta go to pasta here. Yeah,
pasta's a great story. Consider this a public service announcement as well as a lesson in cooking 101. To cook pasta, boil water first. Three American students living abroad in Florence, Italy, learned this the hard way when they started a fire in their apartment by cooking pasta without any water. According to an Italian newspaper, made it in the newspaper. The 20-year-old students brought home pasta from the supermarket and they put the dry noodles straight into a pot without any water and lit the stove. I mean, really? Really? The pot quickly burst into flames, caused a fire. The group called upon local firefighters who came, kicked down the door,
and said, this is the most American story of all time.
Amen,
is
that what brother.
And we were like, screw you guys. We're going to the home of pasta and cooking it without any water.
What's amazing is they fought the fire with water. Sometimes it's important.
Was the pasta delicious?
The pasta was not delicious. Kitchen furniture. No one was harmed, but kitchen furniture were burned. I mean, this was quite a fire. I mean, could you not put the pasta out yourself?
Yeah, do they not? Because you'd think if you put the pasta out with water, then you would have had cooked pasta and things would have went okay. Like, there was actually a solution there.
So
if they just had timed it right.
Could I ask you this? Have they never seen pasta cooked on TV, a movie, a friend, mom, dad, the dead cat that returned home? I mean, no, nothing, never?
Apparently not. I feel like this is something that's, if I may be a grandpa, which I am not yet.
Mm-hmm.
It does seem to be one of these things with these millennials these days.
Oh my gosh.
There's like this weird thing. We've had interns and stuff that just like cook stuff in the microwave with tin foil on it. You're just like, I feel like a basic thing of society. If you're going to microwave things, you know, you don't put tin foil in the microwave. You know, it's like that type of knowledge seems to be lacking, that sort of basic life skill, you know, to get through the point where you can get your burrito hot. Like, you got to have that life skill. We're doing a lot for you here. Capitalism has come up with a system in which they will develop, they will make the tortilla for you. They will make all the beans and the cheese and the sour cream for you. Then they will combine it all together. Then they will flash freeze it. Then they will ship it to a place right near you. All you got to do is take it out. And then they've created an amazing device that instead of it taking 40 minutes to cook, will cook in like 2.5. All you got to do is not cover it in tinfoil. This should not be a high hurdle to clear.
I don't know. It sounds very complex to me. Okay. I don't. So anyway, the problem is this story went nationwide, and the comments about America, not so good.
No.
One poster said this derives from the fact that in the U.S., everything is bought already cooked. American women in the kitchen are a disaster. They don't even know how to make a hard egg.
We're not even allowed to say women are allowed to go in the kitchen.
That's exactly right. Kitchen.
You got a hashtag me too if you say that.
One warned others not to be too ironic in their comments, as one of these three could become the next U.S. Secretary of State or the next president. Don't think ironic is the word they were looking for. Upon hearing about the plight of Americans and their difficulty with navigating a boiling pot of water, the famed chef from some famous restaurant there in Florence offered them four-hour Italian cooking classes.
Nice.
He said, I understand there's a strong communication deficit on the part of this city, and they need to be taught the very basics of Italian cooking, and understanding is always necessary. And the word is that the students are going to be able to take this and want to take this as soon as they figure out how a wired telephone works. Then they're in.
Isn't it? Probably true. I will say this to Italy. We at least haven't elected Mussolini. We're not good at cooking things.
Going back to that.
But we haven't elected Mussolini, which is nice. That's at least one thing we can say that we have not done, but you did. Another thing we didn't do? Ally with Adolf Hitler. We didn't do that either, Italy. Yeah, your food is really good. but we didn't, like, assist in a genocide.
Right.
That was, I thought, a nice thing that we haven't done.
Right.
So, yes, we suck at cooking pasta. But, I'm going to go with our side of this historical argument here.
I got to tell you, I'm going with the pizza. I'm going with the pizza and the pasta. I mean, when it all comes down to it, really, they've eaten well. No matter what was going on.
That's true.
They've eaten well. I hate to use this phrase, but to boil it all down, that really is kind of where I live.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. Love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
California is suing the Trump administration. Why? Because they had the audacity. No, actually, they had the sick, twisted gall to actually ask people living in the United States if they were citizens of the United States. You can't ask that. Oh, that hurts. You can hear the babies cry right now. The Commerce Department revealed last night that the citizenship question would be added to the 2020 census, and California lawmakers lit up. The horror! California Attorney General tweeted the quote, "The question is not just a bad idea, it's illegal." Can you... wait, it's illegal? What law? And by the way, being here without papers is also illegal. Just want to throw that in. California, sit down, please. This is a citizenship question, not the Jewish question. This is a check in the box. Are you supposed to be living here? Check yes or no. I remember where citizens used to have to travel to a city of their birth, you know, ride on the back of a donkey, even if you were pregnant, for the census. Okay. Trump isn't Herod. He's not going to kill all the little children. All you have to do is put your little check mark. Yes or no. That's it. I mean, the country knows why you really care about this census. And it's not because you care so deeply for illegal immigrants. This is all about political power. Think this one through, America. If progressive lawmakers can weaponize illegal immigrants, they can make them citizens. What is the census for? To see how many representatives you get in Congress. It's why they want open borders. It's why they've changed the word illegal and replaced it with undocumented. When states such as California refuse to follow federal immigration policies and allow anyone and everyone to pour into their state without consequence, they know that they're guaranteeing one certainty. It's not security and it's not safety. They're banking on loyalty, votes, and expansive power in Washington. Trump is counting on that fact that non-citizens will refuse to answer this question. That will affect the number of congressional seats. Wait a minute. Hold it. If that reduces their power in Congress, you could then deny sanctuary states of political power, and that could block federal grant money. This is an attempt to nullify the advantage that progressive lawmakers have been building for years, an advantage they've gained by allowing and encouraging people to break the law. This addition to the census is a consequence for their lawlessness. And the battle between California and the Trump administration is just beginning to heat up. I mean, we might end up being better off in the long run if Trump does extend his wall to include California.
It's Tuesday, March 27th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
I'm going to lead with this tonight at 5 o'clock. And California, I'm on your side. No. I am. And, you know, Donald Trump doesn't want to count these people as citizens at all. And that's wrong. But you're going to have to compromise, because if you don't, you know, then you're never going to be able to get anything through. You're never going to be able to get anything done. You know, we'll just fracture even more and you'll lose all of that power. And so, you know, he'll get his way. So I was thinking this morning, he's not going to let you count him as a citizen, right? So how about you compromise and count them as a quarter of a person or half a person or three-fifths a person, something like that? Because that way, you'll get your way. They'll be counted. You see what I'm saying? And it can slowly ease into everybody saying, yeah, they're citizens, even though we know they're not citizens now. But if you could say they're three-fifths citizens, it's not that big of a deal in a few years to say, yeah, they're total citizens. What do you think, progressives? Good idea? No. You're right. It's better if you hold your ground right now and say, I'm going to count them as zero. I'm going to count them as zero. Because then you'll win. I'll present that. I mean, this is noodling it now. I'm going to present that whole idea here. I think it's been tried before, but we'll present that idea in today's age, coming up at 5 o'clock only on the Blaze TV, theblaze.com/TV. All right. Last night on television, we talked a little bit about Spooky Dude. Spooky Dude is back to the chalkboard and looking at all of the connections. Because did anybody see that the press, CNN, was actually writing a story yesterday saying these crazy kids, they get into their mystery van and then they just go around and they drive and they saw the dog even helps them solve murder mysteries. It's crazy. They just, the media just thinks, wants us to believe that this is just, these marches were just spontaneous. And is there anyone within the sound of my voice that believes that the teenagers could have pulled something like this off? I mean, I don't even think they could have pulled off the plexiglass, you know, podiums. Because you don't think that if teenagers were doing this, they got the busing down, they got the permits, they got the police, you know, they have the insurance all done. They got the staging and the speakers and the music and the invitations. They got all of it right. These poor Parkland students who have been through so much. You don't think one thing they wouldn't have like looked at each other and went, oh, crap, we forgot the podium. No, they even had the podiums, the really nice plexiglass ones and the really expertly printed signs.
A lot more organized than I was at 17, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, yeah, they're good. They're amazing. They're amazing. Okay, so what really happened? Well, you are seeing a coordinated assault on the Second Amendment, and you know that. But there's one story that nobody's talking about that we mentioned last week that I think is important to mention again. I want to give you a quote. Guess who said this? I'm very much against guns. And if it can be organized on a large scale, I wouldn't be opposed to taking them all away. You're right, Henry Kissinger. Kissinger.
It's an interesting impression there.
Yeah, spooky dude.
Spooky dude.
George Soros. Mm-hmm. I'm very much against guns. And if it can be organized on a large enough scale, I wouldn't be opposed to it, meaning taking away all the guns. Now, we found out yesterday that Remington, the gun maker, has officially filed for bankruptcy protection. But there's a lot of things going on with that. And one of those things is people have stopped buying guns. There was this huge run on guns at the very end of the Bush administration, and it went through all the way for the last 8 years. Well, these gun companies, they all geared up to make all kinds of guns. Everybody's buying guns, and it's going to last forever. And then Trump comes in, and everyone's like, whew, well, we don't have to worry about our guns being taken away. Crickets. The gun stores are hearing crickets, even at this time. Can you imagine if Hillary Clinton were in office and this debate was going on? How many guns? You wouldn't be. I'd still be standing in line the day after the Parkland shooting. I'd still today be standing in line at Cabela's. But because people think that Donald Trump is in, this is not going to happen. People are not buying guns. And so gun sales are way down. Well, Remington is the first one to go into for bankruptcy protection. But there's something else that happened. How realistic is it, Stu, that we will sign away our Second Amendment rights?
How realistic is it that we will
without
sign it, away?
Without a civil war, how realistic, what would it take to get America, state by state, to repeal the Second Amendment?
I mean, incredible amounts of emotion driven by incredible amount of tragedy that we can't even imagine at this point. I mean, nothing even close to what we're dealing with now. And I still think it would be incredibly difficult. And certainly I don't think you could avoid in this country a civil war if you were to try to go house to house and take people's guns away. That would not be pretty. And it's not doable.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Repealing the Second Amendment does not mean all the guns are off the street. People, I think, a lot of times are like, oh, well, that's all you'd have to do. No, it's still 320, 330 million of them out there. And many would not be turned in, you know, day one.
I think
it's the way is that I would phrase that. Now, luckily, you've already turned yours into the military, so you don't have to worry about
that. Well, that was Pat. Mine were just lost. I don't know where.
I don't think you want to talk about your guns being lost. I think it doesn't seem better than the alternative.
Well, they weren't lost. They were lost.
You melted them. Didn't you melt them down?
Military.
You lost them.
I melted them. Anyway, let's not focus on that. I just don't have them anymore. Anyway.
Yeah. None of them.
None of them.
The entire collection.
Entire collection.
Because you spent a long time acquiring, antique weapons.
Mm. Darn it.
Many useful weapons.
Darn it. Nope.
And then all of them either melted or gave to the military.
Even the pop gun that we got in Disneyland years ago,
yeah,
gone.
And again, they were
either, damn those kids.
Did you melt them on the way to giving them to the military? How did that happen?
I don't know, but I've been calling for the mystery van to come and see if they can figure it out. I have no idea. It may have been ghosts. I don't know. Let's not get into it any deeper than this. So we know that it's not reasonable to go for the Second Amendment, right? That's where progressives come in. What's the idea of progressives?
Well, what you do, Glenn, is you just take little steps. Let me just call them common sense steps. Let's say, infringe slightly on your, let's say, right to bear arms.
Right.
In a common sense
fashion. So we just take it little by little. And then Cass Sunstein, he would suggest, what do you do with the people then? You nudge them. Right?
Mm-hmm. A little nudge.
I'm going to show you a pretty large nudge that no one is talking about. And you get two more of these nudges, and I don't think you have to worry about the Second Amendment. I don't think you have to worry about it. I mean, if you're a progressive, if you're you, yeah, you're going to have to worry about it. Two nudges is all it's going to take. They've already done one. Three, and we're out.
Because there was a time I would say absolutely no chance of the Second Amendment going away. But the way we have seen people change over the past decade.
You don't even need to get anybody to change. I'll show you the first nudge that happened last week that nobody's talking about, and you should be aware next. Have you done your taxes yet, Stu?
No. Yeah. I mean, tax day's in October. Why would I do them now?
Tax day's in October?
Yeah. October 15th. Well, that's the extension tax day, which I file every year.
It's usually what I do, too. Anyway, IRS has released their annual Dirty Dozen list of the tax scams and phone scams.
This is a good reason why you shouldn't just file the extension, by the way.
I know, because by the time you get to it, somebody else has filed for you, and you're like, wait, what? Oops. Hold it. The deal is that people will call taxpayers and tell them that they owe money and they have to pay promptly or they're going to, you know, be punished and they're going to come and take your property. They'll call you up. Hi, it's a Bill from the IRS. They're a little more credible than this, but people are falling for it. And there's a lot of threats in today's world. And it just takes one wink. I don't know what the hell's wrong with me. One weak link.
Well, you are very drunk. That's one thing.
Is that what
it is? It's hard to do a show when you're
hammered. I don't remember drinking. Oh my gosh, blackouts.
Yeah, that's probably what it is.
I'm blacking out even the drinking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's tough.
Might be having an aneurysm, but I'll have it checked out in a week or so. Anyway, LifeLock Identity Theft Protection is there, and they add to the power of Norton Security now to help protect you against the threats to your identity and your devices that you can't easily see or fix on your own. And if you have a problem, they have the agents that'll work to fix it. Now, nobody can stop all cyber threats, prevent all identity theft, or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but LifeLock with Norton Security is able to uncover the threats that you might otherwise miss. So go to LifeLock.com or call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use the promo code BECK for an additional 10% off your first year. That's promo code BECK. Get an additional 10% off now at LifeLock.com.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
So, if you're a progressive, how do you short circuit the Second Amendment? How can you pull guns off the street? How can you stop gun sales? Well, you could do it a couple of ways. You can go through the Second Amendment and through Congress, which is going to be a headache. You could go after the manufacturers, which George Soros said, when I believe it could be a coordinated attack, we can talk to institutional investors and drop their stock. That is going to happen. Money doesn't talk, it screams. Money, money, money. Stu, name the top four or five banks in America.
Number one, J.P. Morgan Chase. Number two, Bank of America. Number three, Wells Fargo. Number four, Citigroup. Number five, Goldman Sachs.
If you really wanted to circumvent and crush the industry, all you'd have to do is to go to, let's say, Citigroup and say, hey, Citigroup, don't take any more transactions from gun stores. Let's start here. Gun stores that sell guns to people under 21. And if they sell high capacity magazines, if they sell ARs, don't do business with them. If you could get Citigroup to do it, and then you could get Bank of America, JP Morgan Chase, or Wells Fargo, nobody has anywhere to put their money. Nobody can use their credit cards to buy guns. Nobody can make a financial transaction. You've put the gun industry out of business. Last week, there was a story that I haven't seen reported anywhere. It was reported here last week, but you need to know about it. Citigroup did that last week. We are no longer going to offer any financial assistance. There will be no transactions with our credit cards, investments, loans, banking services, no services to stores or people that are selling guns under 20 to people under 21, which is legal. Under 21, if you sell high capacity magazines, you will no longer be able to have any financial services from Citigroup. So what happens? Citigroup loses those gun stores. They go over to Bank of America. They go over to Wells Fargo. They go to Chase Manhattan. What happens if one of those said, you know what, we're going to do the same thing? This is happening. This is happening. So far, it's only Citigroup that's doing it. May I recommend, if you have money with Citigroup and you believe in the Second Amendment, you call them and let them know, I don't appreciate your new gun restrictions. I'm moving my money. And when you open an account with Bank of America or JP Morgan Chase or Wells Fargo, you tell them, by the way, I'm opening up an account with you because I left Citigroup because of their stance on gun stores. You have to show the power that you have before the other three banks. Because look at this. It's Citigroup, Bank of America, JP Morgan Chase, Wells Fargo, and then Goldman Sachs. I don't know about you, but I've never seen the little kiosk for Goldman Sachs. I don't even think of that as a bank. That's number five. All you have to do is take three of these out. You take four. Well, you think Goldman Sachs is going to? Yeah, we only take Goldman Sachs credit cards. Yeah, you think the American Express card is hard to buy stuff with? Try a Goldman Sachs credit card.
That's $13.2 trillion in total wealth. But you take out those top five banks, you've taken out $10 trillion of that.
Who's going to do business if the top two, three, four, five banks won't do any kind of commercial services for gun stores, gun providers? How do you buy them?
Glenn Beck, Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So now we were talking about what is happening with Citigroup, where last week they said that they were going to stop all financial services to any gun organization or gun store or anything that sold guns to anyone under 21. They sold high capacity magazines. They would offer no financial services, so they won't take credit cards, won't accept credit. They won't take out. They won't allow them to take out loans with Citigroup, do banking with Citigroup at all. So one of the big five is already out. And I contend there's really only four big banks. Goldman Sachs is not a bank. I know it is, but it's not what everybody thinks of as a bank. Now, you can go to the smaller banks, but what are the repercussions for those smaller banks? Because all banks work together. And it's kind of like what the pot growers are going through right now. You know, there's some pot growers that, you know, they can't do any financial services with any bank because it's technically illegal federally. And so they can't go to a bank. And a lot of these you know, pot distributors living in states where it is legal to sell pot don't have any place to put all the money. Here's where the answer comes. What are they doing? They've created their own cryptocurrency, and they're asking people, if you want to buy pot, we'll give you a discount if you send the money into this cryptocurrency and then you use these tokens, because the pot growers don't have banking services. And it's starting to work. This is another reason why I can't imagine how the government is going to allow cryptocurrencies to work, because the more the government decides to screw around with you, if they start to, let me ask you this. Everything stays the same, except all of the banks say, we're not going to do business with Cabela's anymore. We're not going to do business with any firearms store anymore. And Cabela's is on the verge of bankruptcy because they can't take credit cards or anything else. What percentage of this country would transfer money into a Cabela's token or to a Bitcoin and go to Cabela's and just buy it on Bitcoin? I would. Would you? I would do it out of principle to protect them.
Yeah. I mean, you would. It would. It's the type of thing that if, you know, if they start taking away rights, especially a right as important as that one, I mean, there's going to be a lot of people who would do that. And it's funny, you know, obviously the pot thing is kind of going the other way, right? It's something we haven't had access to and all of a sudden is available in many states.
Mm-hmm.
So you can kind of see that happening. They'll probably embrace that before they embrace guns. But you could, you know, with Citibank doing this, it's a big deal. I mean, it is. It's, I don't think it's legal, first of all. You know, and because there are laws in at least some states that require you to sell to people who are legally able to buy. You can't discriminate on basis of age. And it's funny because a lot of these things were included by left wing. They were started by left wing groups who said, you know, who wanted to, they just, you know, they gave that list of like age, gender, you know, sexual orientation. They go through the big list of things you're not allowed to discriminate on. And the bottom line is, like, you have to sell to everybody if they are legally available to buy it. It doesn't mean you have to sell liquor to a 13-year-old, but you can't avoid selling liquor to... You couldn't just say, you know what, I think 25 is the right age for liquor purchases. So no, everyone between 21 and 24, I'm going to say no to. That's illegal in several states. So I don't know. I mean, it hasn't been challenged in court yet. These, you know, Dix is the same thing. You know, Dix is saying we're not going to sell guns to a 19-year-old. Well, 19-year-olds are legally available to buy guns. Just like you can't say I'm not going to sell them to a 70-year-old because I think old people shouldn't have them. You can't do that. That's age discrimination. And they're going to get sued over it. That's going to happen.
I don't think they should.
You know, but and it's funny because it's sort of the libertarians in me says... you know what, it's their right and they should be able to sell to whoever they want. However, the law is the law, whether you like it or not. I don't like paying income tax, but I still have to pay it. So these people will have to deal with the legal consequences of their newfound, you know, opposition to selling firearms from a store that sells them all the time.
Right.
So they're gonna have to deal with it.
I kind of like the fact that, you know, I know exactly who Dix is. I know what they really actually believe, what they really want to do, what they will do, what they have done.
Mm-hmm.
And now I know.
Yeah, let's go somewhere else.
Keep driving past Dix. I mean, oh, and yeah, but I only need, you know, basketball, whatever. I'm not going to buy it at Dix. I mean, I like that. I like that. I
like that too. However, the law is.
I know.
And they're gonna have to deal with it. It's funny because all the progressives who will now come on the side and say, "Of course you're able to discriminate on the basis of age. It's what we want today," and that will be the basis of their entire argument. It's what we want today, therefore we should be able to do it. Well, this is why your laws, you know, have consequences you don't necessarily consider. As a company, you know, look, if you've got a constitutionally guaranteed right. I don't know how you know this. It's these restrictions aren't constitutional anyway, and they'll be opposed from a constitutional basis as well, and it will likely go to the Supreme Court anyway. But I don't think even from a state basis you're able to do it, at least in several states.
Let me go to Chase in Washington. Hello, Chase. You're on the Glenn Beck Program.
Hi, good morning, Glenn. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Yeah, you kind of raised the point that I was going to bring up about the marijuana, the pot industry, that the banks don't do business with them, and it's legal here in Washington, so but it creates a lot of cash, which comes with its own issues, because you have armed security guards, the product is being traveled, it's armed, but I would pull out. If banks stopped buying, stopped doing that, I don't think it's going to stop Americans from buying guns, to be honest with you. I feel enough Americans have the attitude of me, well, kind of like Pat did a few years ago with the AR ban that was supposed to be coming. You know, he went out and he was like, well, I'm getting one.
Mm-hmm.
And so did millions of others. And I think this would just, I think the banks start doing this more and more, it's just going to push more and more Americans to buy guns. I feel gun owners get entrenched and they hunker down when they start messing around with the Second Amendment.
How do you feel about Citigroup doing this now?
Oh, I think they're absolute snakes in the grass. Nobody looks at history anymore, Glenn. Anytime atrocities have been happened by government, the first thing they do is they take away the citizens' right to defend themselves.
Oh, you're a kook.
I know.
Crazy.
Darn history.
I know. History's mystery. That we're past all of that stuff. Thanks so much, Chase. Appreciate the phone call. We'll take your phone call next, 888-727-BECK, 888-727-BECK. Let me tell you about our new sponsor. It is FilterBuy. FilterBuy. FilterBuy is America's leading provider of HVAC filters for homes as well as small businesses. And recently I got the opportunity to talk to the owner, and I really like this guy. David was working on Wall Street. He had a big title. He was making a ton of money. And about 5 years ago, he found out that the supply business that his grandfather had started in 1958 was being sold. And all of those jobs in Alabama would be lost forever, and the heritage would be lost. So David decided to quit his job, and he bought the business. And he transformed, you know, that little company into FilterBuy. Now they employ over 100 people in the same little town here in America. And all of their air filters are manufactured in Alabama. They're shipped for free within 24 hours. And you can even set up auto delivery and you'll save 5% on top. They have 600 sizes available. I mean, you should see the filter size for this place. It's enormous. You can fit your home. They can fit, you know, this building with 80,000 square feet. They can customize them, and they do it all here in America. They do it for less, and you can have it within 24 hours. You're going to find the right filter for your home or for your business at filterby.com. That's filterby.com. Filterby.com.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
We go to Dan in Georgia. Hello, Dan. You're on the Glenn Beck Program.
Hey, Glenn. How you doing? Hey, listen, man. Real quick to the point. I'm trying to figure this out. Now, the left says that you have to bake a cake for a gay couple because that's the right thing to do. And I guess constitutionally now that's, you know, they said that that's what we got to do. But constitutionally, I can buy a gun at the age of 20, but they say that I can't buy a gun at the age of 20 because it doesn't feel good to them. Are they going to represent me, or are they going to represent the baker? Or I'm just kind of confused. I can't keep up with these people.
No, I know. Here's the thing. Have you ever really looked into postmodernism?
No.
Okay.
No.
Postmodernism, just Google search it. Postmodernism is what we're going through right now. It is, you know, and I was going to write a book on it, and Simon & Schuster said, nobody wants to hear that. And I said, yeah, nobody wanted to hear about progressives either. I'm telling you, this is what's going on. Postmodernism is this idea that is that is beyond the modern thought. Modernism is the Enlightenment and facts and reason and enlightenment. What postmodernism is, life has no meaning. There is no objective truth. There is no objective reality. It is just what you want it to be. So it is a dismantling of facts and reason. That's what's being taught now, that you are what you think, that your reality is now my reality too, because you say it's a reality, that the X and the Y chromosome don't matter anymore, even if science says, because somebody else says, I don't think that's right. That's postmodernism, and it makes no sense. It causes chaos. That's what was being taught. That's how we're living now. We've passed the modern world. It's why I've been saying the last few weeks, we've got to get back to the principles of the Enlightenment, because it's being replaced by postmodernism. Thanks for your call. I'm sorry to bore the snot out of you on that. Let's talk to Marilyn. Hello, Marilyn.
Hi, Mr. Beck. How are you?
Good.
Okay. Last week, when I heard that story for the first time on your show, mm-hmm. I called Swiss Bank to close my account. They answered the phone. Thank you for calling Citibank. Are you calling about our new policies?
Wow.
I would give anything to know how many people have closed their accounts. How do we find that out?
Well, I don't think Citibank's going to talk about that. That would be very bad for their shareholders. But I will tell you this, if they're answering their calls like that, you can bet it's quite a few. And Marilyn, have you seen this story anywhere else?
No.
I mean,
your show last week and I acted immediately.
Yeah. Thank you. Good for you, Marilyn. Where'd you put the money?
I didn't. I just closed my account.
Okay. All right. All right, good.
You can send us some if you want. We support the Second Amendment.
Yeah. We're tracing the call so we can check under your bed later. let me go to Brian in Ohio. Hello, Brian.
Hello, Glenn. Hey, a couple of real quick points. First of all, there are banks out there in this country that are part of states that are republics, for instance, North Dakota and also Texas. They aren't part of our central banking system, which is what we fought a revolutionary war against in the first place. Mm. As far as going back to postmodern progressives, that's just a term that we should stop using it and start calling the kettle black and call them socialists for what they are. And as far as Bitcoin goes, bring it on. That's exactly what our forefathers wanted. It's not the government out of our money. It's the dream for federalists and libertarians. Bring it on. The more it's a welcoming. It's welcome to me.
I will tell you, Brian, that I'm with you on that, that we are entering a time of more freedom, not less. It's just going to be this transition. And, you know, it will require governments to become more and more hostile to people's and individual rights. They're not going to go quietly. Nobody's going to lose this much power and this much money and go away quietly in the night. And that's the underlying tension that I think that we're feeling is the smart people know this is coming, and the smart people know, holy cow, that, wait a minute, what does that mean for me? And they know that they're going to lose their power and their ability to manipulate. And so that's really what you're feeling, and you're feeling it even through things like Facebook. We kind of went to Facebook because we thought, okay, hey, this is great. And we're just going to be able to have our own news feed and we're going to get the news we want. Well, that's not what happened, is it? We're getting the news feed they think we want. And now they're giving us the news feed the government says that they should give to us. They're defining what hate speech is, what fake news is. And we all know that fake news is real. We all know that Russia is trying to influence. However, now we've got the government wanting to get involved and telling Facebook, who has all of our algorithms or has all of our information in their algorithm, exactly what they should show us and what they shouldn't. I'm going to show you something on TV tonight. This has been done before. When you started to go down the road of radicalism, because there was high unemployment and there was, you know, civil unrest, the government, what did they do? The first thing they did said, control the media. I'll show it to you in history tonight at 5 o'clock, only on theblaze.com/TV.
By the way, did you hear that they've developed melting resistant ice cream? You can cover that on theblaze.com/TV. Bet you won't talk about the real stories.
So think about that. McDonald's did that in like the 1950s.
What are you talking about?
Have you ever had their, notice it doesn't say milk shake? Have you ever had their shake? Have you ever?
Yeah,
I lived in Arizona.
Times.
It doesn't melt. It just gets hot and frothy and nasty. This isn't something new, and I don't think something that we should be working on. I want my flying car first.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
Uncle Sam just unfriended Facebook. This should prove to be interesting. Yesterday, the FTC announced a broad investigation of Facebook, saying that they have substantial concerns about the privacy practices of Facebook. In a letter to Facebook, founder and CEO Mark Zuckerberg, a group of state attorney generals demanded specific answers about how companies like Cambridge Analytica is getting all the information of Facebook users without those users' permission. The moves by the FTC and 37 state attorneys general, in addition to the three congressional committees that have already called Zuckerberg to testify next month about the user data breach. Facebook has also been sued by Cook County, Illinois. A state attorney says that Facebook violated Illinois fraud law. One Facebook user is suing them for violation of user privacy. Another shareholder is suing because of the steep drop in the stock price after the Cambridge Analytica data harvesting scandal was revealed. Is this just a bump in the road, or is this just the tip of the iceberg, and are they the Titanic? Because of all of the negative headlines, Zuckerberg's late effort to answer questions about the Cambridge Analytica mess kind of really didn't help. Facebook stock lost $75 billion in market value last week. $75 billion with a B. Forbes reported that the personal net worth of Zuckerberg dropped by $5 billion. What does that feel like? Stu, what do you think that feels like? How much is he worth? $50
billion? I don't know. Is he that much? I'll check it out.
What would that be like to lose? Do you think he'd even feel it? Do you think he'd notice it?
So 62.2. So he's probably down in the 50s now. 62.2 billion. I mean, you'd notice it, certainly, but you certainly doesn't change your lifestyle. I think he is.
You're not like, hey, honey, we got to cut back on the dinner's out.
No more Uber Eats for us.
We got to go pick it up ourselves from Panda King.
I think he is legitimately now fearing a downturn in his business. There's been a lot of things.
You said this earlier today. You remember MySpace. I mean, I remember it because weren't we working at Fox with Rupert Murdoch when MySpace, he bought it for like $1 billion, maybe more. And then like the next day, it was like, really, it felt like the next day. But within a very short period of time, it was worth nothing.
It was worth like, I think Justin Timberlake bought it for like $25 million. And I was like, oh my gosh, he bought it for nothing. Now it's worth like 8 cents. It was like,
now the other Justin Timberlake, not the famous one, bought it.
Just some guy named some Justin Timberlake bought it. Yeah, no, I mean, I don't know that you necessarily feel it, but I think I don't think he's a guy necessarily driven by money. Zuckerberg's different than, you know, a lot of these billionaires out there who have done nothing but try to, you know, like, I mean, they might care about things, but like they're driven by cash.
He's not.
I mean, he was what? 20 years old, and they tried to buy Facebook for like $14 billion and he turned it down.
And
out pretty well.
I think I remember making fun of him for that.
Oh, I thought he was a complete idiot.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, because again, MySpace could happen to you in a couple years and you have nothing.
I know.
It worked out fairly well for Mark.
So what does this mean for his 2020 campaign? Do you believe he's going to run?
It's where everyone just kind of, I guess because we know who he is and he's rich and he seems to have, you know, interest in political causes, we all assume he's running. Not to mention he has an incredibly well-crafted understanding of the American people, given the fact that he can look at everything they've ever done at any time he wants. People are kind of assuming he's going to run. It may happen.
Last week, hashtag delete Facebook was trending on Twitter, and some wondered if this was the beginning of the end of the world's largest social networking platform. The company is definitely black and blue and headed toward the red, but it's probably too soon to sound the death knell for Facebook. It will apologize. It will tweak its user policies. It'll vow to do better at protecting your data and all of your secrets. And then your crazy uncle can get back to posting those cat memes in confidence.
It's Tuesday, March 27th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
I think if I were Facebook, I would be looking for radical changes myself.
Well, you know, it's funny because a lot of the things that they've had problems with here, they've already changed the policies. They changed them years ago, but we're just kind of now finding out about it.
I think radical change with the giving people control of the algorithm in some regard. I mean, I don't like the fact that they have all of our data. I'd like to control my own data, and then also I really don't think I'm comfortable with them deciding who's a trusted source and who's not. I don't want them to do that. I want to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think what their point is, and tell me this is not every progressive politician that has ever held any power. But their point is, yes, we know what you want, but what you want is not right for you.
Correct.
You should want something else. And they are saying, I think in self-interest here, not even like a altruistic or even a political self. I think it's self-interest. And what they're saying is, what people are doing is they're getting online and they're angrily fighting out political issues and tweeting stories that are questionable. And that's pissing off their other friends. And what it's doing is it's hurting people's experience. Yes, they might stay on the platform longer, but when they leave, they're angry. When they leave, they didn't have a good experience. And everyone keeps talking about deleting Facebook accounts because what am I getting out of it? I've had several family members, I bet you have too, who have at least made the play that I'm off Facebook for the next few weeks. I'm deleting my Facebook account.
I have greatly reduced my personal time on Facebook.
I have zero Facebook.
Really?
Facebook.
I've greatly worked. I like it. It's a chance for me to interact with people.
Yeah, I don't like people.
Okay, all right.
So
well, all
I don't have that problem.
Right. All right.
But
sure.
I really, I don't particularly use it like that. But I hear this all the time. My wife used it all the time, and she just found herself not enjoying it. So I think what Facebook's saying is like you'll enjoy it more if you're seeing are pictures of your friend's dog. And I think, maybe there's something to that, but they're trying to force that change, even though people aren't requesting it. People can, they don't have to follow news accounts. They don't have to click like on the Glenn Beck page. They do that because they want to get the updates from Glenn Beck. And so if you're giving them updates that are based on news because you want them, in my free market sense, they should just give you what you're asking for. That's what Facebook was supposed to do. Now they're trying to manipulate that.
What do you think about the idea whenever they suggest somebody that I should like, it's always like, no, I don't want to like that person. No.
I'm sad you think that about me.
You
get that?
You should also like, no. And I look through all their likes and I'm like, no. They don't give me anybody new, different, out of the box. Yeah. Somebody is, there's no deep thinking. It's like, oh, you're a caveman. Here's another caveman.
Right.
And you're like, all right, but could you occasionally show me, I don't know, how about a Neanderthal man? Those are the same, dummy. Okay, well,
here's I'm a caveman from long ago who held a club.
Right.
All right.
Show me a guy who's holding maybe a club made out of bronze.
Yeah, no, I don't know that it's necessarily as big a problem as it's being portrayed as with the data. I mean, I think a lot of that really wasn't their fault. It really wasn't. I mean, and they've tightened it up anyway since then. but people get sick of these things. You know, social networks are kind of like clubs, right? You open a new one and, you know, you open a new club or a new restaurant in New York City, it's trendy for a while and they can go away. Facebook has been the one that's really made people believe that's not the case. It's,
well,
it's a utility.
Usually what happens is the club becomes popular and then it becomes, you know, everything to everybody, and then it starts to go dark. And then it's just like a biker club, and you're like, okay, we got to get out of here.
Yeah, well, the cool kids stop coming, right?
Correct.
And that's what, did you see the Elon Musk thing the other day?
No.
So Elon Musk is on Twitter, and he starts bashing Facebook in some way. I guess he has some, he has a bit of an issue with Mark Zuckerberg, dueling billionaires. Mm. And he tweets something like, what's Facebook? You know, just kind of wrecking Facebook. And someone points out to him, hey, Elon, why don't you delete Tesla and SpaceX's Facebook page, which have millions and millions of followers then, if you don't know what it is. And he responded, okay, I'll get to that right away. They've been deleted.
Wow.
He's just deleted his Facebook pages from his major companies. And I think they had, like, between the two of them, 6 or 7 million followers.
That's foolish.
Well, it's not a good business decision.
No.
But, I mean, he...
That's Elon Musk.
This is why being a billionaire is great. This is why we all need to get there someday.
Yeah. When I was a kid, it was called Screw You Money.
It was not called Screw You Money. It was
called something else, Money. But
had a different letter at the beginning.
Yes, and other letters after. that's what it was called. You know, you just be able to have that so you could at any time you could go, you know what, screw you.
Yeah.
No, not doing it. Not doing it.
You don't have to care.
Right.
And that's what's so great about being a billionaire. I mean, sure, it's great. You can have all the benefits.
That would be the advantage of having, you know, even a couple of $1,000 in the bank. You know what I mean? Most Americans can't come up with $500. Most Americans cannot come up with $500.
Is that true? $500?
$500.
$500. I feel like I want to fact check it.
Go ahead. I want you to fact check it right now. We'll wait.
Go ahead. Do you have any?
I'm not saying you're wrong.
No. Give me some think music. Give me some Jeopardy music. Give me something here, Sarah, just to, while we have Stu, who doesn't believe me.
Oh, that's nice. Soothing.
Not what I was looking for, but it'll do.
This is a little different, as usual, from the Glenn Beck. This is why
I turn up the music.
No,
go stop the music. Okay.
This is why America I exist.
It is actually. This is what I pay him for.
No, you did see a story about this, and it is a $500 surprise expense would put most Americans into debt. Does that mean they cannot come up with $500? That means that a surprise expense of $500.
All right, but isn't that the same thing? It would put you in debt. It's not. I don't have $500. Can I go borrow it? Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's, yeah.
But I don't have $500. So I meant the same thing.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's not like they can't, you know.
Because, I mean, I think that's why you have credit, right? So if you have a circumstance in which you don't have the money, you're able to come up with
Does it surprise you that people don't have $500?
It's a very high amount. And that's just the United States, which where things are relatively good. You know, if you make $32,000 a year.
Oh, geez.
Do you make $32,000 a year? I think you're just cleared that now, Glenn. Congratulations
on
that. There's many people who don't. But $32,000 a year is not thought of as a high salary in the United States, right?
Like average salary is what, 55 or 59?
Yeah, mid-50s.
Yeah.
If you make $32,000 a year, you are in the richest 1% in the world, the wealthiest 1%. The whole thing about, we've talked about this before, progressives love to bash the wealthiest 1%, but all their union members are all in it when you look at it globally. And where does it, if they treat these things the same way as they do here in the United States, it's take the money from those rich 1%ers and give it to everyone else. And it's funny, the progressives here don't mention that stat all that often, but you know where they mention it? Everywhere else in the world.
You know what's really weird, Stu, is you know how the unions have lost their hold on America?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know that those unions have branched out to other countries?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In fact, they like to go to the poor countries. And you know what they say? The wealthiest 1% in the world, you know those rich people making $32,000 in America? We need to take their money. How do we do it? And they have organized people And they are made, these are mass movements around the world to try to make that into a reality. Now, it's not easy, but
I don't
this
know
is
how
what
we,
they do.
I don't know how we got here. I don't even know how I got to $500. Can you trace it back? Anybody? Anybody? How did we get here to $500? Wow.
This is this is not what we do. Oh, we were talking about Facebook. We're talking about Facebook, talking about Zuckerberg was a billionaire and he has all this money. And we talked about whether that would affect him.
That was a SU money. Screw you money.
Screw you money.
Screw you money. Mm-hmm. The average person doesn't have screw you money. I think the government should pass out screw you money. Oh, wait, the Fed is already doing that, aren't they? Except we're the ones getting screwed, strangely. Liberty Safe. Just a great company. It builds safes here in America. I don't know how many safes they were building when we first started with them, but now they're huge. They make all of the Cabela safes. Were you with them the other day when they came in?
I was not.
They make the name brand safes for all of these other companies, and now their name is becoming so popular and so important that, like Cabela's, it now says Cabela's by Liberty. Liberty Safe is just this little company that could, that just thought, well, you know what, we can still make them better here in America. And they made these safes to where, you know, they could drop their competitor safe from two stories on top of a Liberty. Their competitor would split open. The Liberty was intact. And when they reversed it and they dropped the Liberty onto the other competitor safe, it was even funnier. Anyway, Liberty Safe. Right now, you can buy a Liberty Safe at a great price and receive 12 months interest-free payments with zero down and zero APR. They offer Liberty Safes now for as low as $20 a month. These are really good safes. If you have valuables or you have guns that you want to make sure are protected, peace of mind, lifetime warranty, in-home delivery service that's unmatched in the industry. When you buy a Liberty Safe, buy a bigger one. That's the number one complaint. Should have bought a bigger one. And have it installed in your home. Now with 12 months interest-free payments for as low as $20 a month on approved credit. Act now. Protect your valuables. Always protected with a Liberty Safe. Go to LibertySafe.com now. The home of the best-built safes on the planet. It's LibertySafe.com.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. Glenn Beck.
Or was it Chloe? Welcome to the program.
Kim was there too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Kim Kardashian.
What do you?
Did Chloe go on that trip? Do you know? I think Chloe was there as well.
I don't.
First, Kim Kardashian went to Cuba.
Uh huh.
Now Kim Jong Un has gone to China. So I feel like a new series. I mean,
Kim
Ryan Seacrest, as we know, can pretty much make money on anything.
Right.
People don't realize this. He's the executive producer of all the Kardashian stuff. So you think he's made money off American Idol? He laughs at you when you bring up American
he
Idol.
He laughs at you. He laughs. Ha ha. ABC's ratings are down. Ha ha ha. I don't care, peasants.
He's the guy who's doing all that stuff,
yeah,
and has made a fortune off of it, obviously. And so, I mean, if you could get Kim Jong-un to sign, and then you can kind of follow him around the world for all of his adventures, I think it could be a really good show.
Isn't it weird that Dick Clark was replaced really kind of by like the same guy?
Ryan Seacrest? Because he could just do everything and has his hands in everything.
Has his hands in absolutely everything. They both started in music and they're both kind of like this clean cut, behind the scenes kind of guy. They have one really big show, but then, you know, they're the puppet master behind. And now
we do Kim Kardashian. Then we rule the world.
I was amazed at the coverage of the Kim Jong-un to China thing because they don't actually know he's there. They keep the initial coverage was, we saw a giant 21-car train.
No. We saw a giant old 21-car train.
And we think, who on earth would be in that train? It's probably Kim Jong-un.
Yeah.
That's a,
well, who's, you know, it's kind of like if you're in L.A. and you see somebody driving an old, you know, steam automobile, you know that's probably Jay Leno. In this case, you see somebody in an old-timey train, not because he thinks it's cool, it's because that's the best they can do.
Mm-hmm.
It's Kim Jong-un.
It is interesting, though. I mean, I think there does seem to be some discussions going on ahead of the potential Trump meeting with Kim Jong-un, as he's discussed. You've also seen the interesting China trade discussions, which is like, they're like, hey, we might do tariffs. And the market dropped by 1,100 points. And then the news came out yesterday. It's like, God, maybe we won't do tariffs. And then the market went up by 700 points. There may be a lesson in there somewhere. There may somewhere be right. a lesson.
What do you think that lesson is?
Maybe tariffs aren't a great idea.
No, that can't be the lesson.
You don't think?
No, I don't think so. There's got to be another
lesson. Oh, the lesson is, always have a cool 21-car train that's really old that you can go to China with.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now you've got it.
There we go.
Now you've got it. Back in a minute.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
You're right to Jason, who is our head writer and head researcher, specializing in foreign affairs and war. He is a former military intelligence guy. Jason, welcome to the program. How are you?
Thank you. Good.
You've been watching Russia for us. A lot of people have been saying, you know, Donald Trump, he's not tough on Russia. That's concerned me, but not lately. And what he did yesterday is gigantic, probably the biggest thing that we've done against Russia since the 1980s. Am I wrong?
No, absolutely right. 1986, I believe, was the last time we took such strong retaliatory measures.
What was it for? I don't remember.
I don't remember either, but it was during the Reagan administration and the height of the Cold War. Some very, very nasty times. And that's we haven't even gotten this close. Obama expelled a bunch of Russian diplomats, which everyone thought was, you know, going to be, you know, the linchpin that was going to kick a lot of stuff off. The Trump administration actually, you know, before they were actually in office, kind of sounds like they got Mike Flynn to convince Kislyak and the Russians that, hey, don't worry about it, don't retaliate. That's actually the only time the Russians did not retaliate back with some kind of reciprocity. That was the only time. Every other time that we kick out some of their spies, diplomats, they respond, you know, equally.
So have they responded yet?
They have not responded yet. They have they have pledged to retaliate. Putin's spokesman Peskov said that they were looking at ways to do it, and then Putin personally would give the order. I think the last thing I saw was that Putin said that this was like gross blackmail or something like that, quote unquote. But look at some of these numbers. It's pretty insane just for the scope of this. I think we're up over 130 some odd Russian diplomats or spies have been ejected from their country all over the world. That includes 60 from the United States. We shut down a actual full-on consulate in Seattle to include in this. But the UK kicked out 23. The Ukraine kicked out 13.
Wow.
NATO 10, France 4, Germany 4, Poland 4, Canada 4. I don't have time. I'd waste the entire broadcast going through all this. But everybody seems pretty united in this. The only people that are denying that this chemical attack that happened on UK soil, that it was the Russians, are the Russians, which is pretty much how they play it. Mm. Everybody knows who did it.
So what do you think is coming from this?
I think that Russia will respond in kind. I think that the last time that they responded pretty heavily was after some sanctions. They kicked out around 750-ish U.S. diplomats. So now I think, and this is kind of interesting how Trump administration actually targeted Russian spies on top of diplomats. Mm. Now that's kind of like an unspoken thing within the spy world, is that, okay, we're going to allow you to play your little spy games in our country as long as you allow us to play a few spy games in your country.
Can we get who's that spy that we had on? Remember, he was so great. Russian spy.
Barsky?
Yeah. Can we get him on tomorrow?
Yeah,
he'd be great.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, so, the American starts up tomorrow. So that's
is it tomorrow?
Perfect. That's tomorrow.
Oh,
perfect
wow.
timing.
Can't wait. Jeez. I love the American. You watch the Americans?
So no, I'm not.
So, Stu, you were saying earlier, and I find this really interesting, because a lot of people say you should go after the oligarchs, but that might actually help Putin, because he's trying to repatriate all of the money that these oligarchs had taken out.
Yeah, and it actually, the theory is that it actually will strengthen him within his own country because all these oligarchs will have to bring the money back into Russia, and B, he will have more control over them. He wants control over that money. These are not easy problems to solve. But it does seem that the Trump administration has taken a good hard turn on this, and the people he's surrounding. I mean, certainly Bolton coming in is a move in that direction. Mm-hmm. I actually heard this piece of analysis, however, on CNN. I think it was yesterday, and they said, "Well, is this a big move against the Russians? Is this showing a hardening of a position by Trump?" And I don't remember who it was, but they said,
"It definitely is showing that." However, we still have not seen Trump tweet about Russia like this. I mean, he tweets about everything, and he will not tweet about Russia. There's something going on. He will not tweet about Russia. Now you want him to tweet more? You actually want him to tweet about more diverse topics? That's your new analysis here? And the idea is, I am thrilled with a world in which Donald Trump has the right policies and doesn't tweet about them. That's a fantastic solution to all of this. And now the media has come to a point in which they're criticizing him for not tweeting. It's so utterly unbelievable.
Well, the deal is if somebody says it on CNN, does anybody know it?
Well, now you do.
Yeah, now you do. All right, thanks,
the
Jason.
The more you know.
All right, Stu, mm-hmm. down to the dwindling few minutes left in the program.
Yes.
I've got three stories. Choose your news. As I gave you the opportunity, I think last hour or the hour before, cat returns home after 2 days. 2 days after he was buried. Man drowns, headline number two, man drowns while practicing holding his breath, police say. And headline number three, holy cow, I just threw up on international television.
Oh, God. I kind of want the dead cat story because I'm wondering if this is a pet cemetery situation and I'm worried about it.
You think that the cat may have come back to life?
Well, that's what happened in the documentary Pet Cemetery. Yes.
Okay. That was a Stephen King book. Anyway.
Oh, it was a book. Was the book magically moving on my television, Mr. Beck?
It hits you so hard. The Robinson family said goodbye to their beloved cat, Willow. It was an emotional service. They buried their cat under a tree in the backyard. Johnny and Katrina Robinson watched as their sons, Josh, 7, Buddy, 4, sobbed over their 18-month-old male cat. It disappeared, you see. There was a bad storm, winter storm, and the rain and the snow, and Johnny was worried about the cat every night. Buddy was worried and Josh was worried and they sobbed and they cried every night.
Oh no.
Dad said, I haven't seen my son cry for a long time. Boys were very upset. Dad was upset. They had to skip school to mourn the animal. But Dad set him down and said, you know, this is what happens with cats sometimes and animals. And they're lost.
It's a circle of life.
Circle of life. The kid said, no, he's not dead. I can feel it, Dad. That's when...
Really?
Yeah, that's...
Like if I could feel it breathing? Or I could...
No,
I just... Metaphysically.
I just know he's alive. So they put missing posters out all over the... all on the trees and the fence post all over their neighborhood. No one responded. It's when Dad was driving home one night. And he saw a very flat patch of black and gray fur. He pulled the car over, and it was Willow, the cat, run over, flat. He came home, showed the kids, hey, look at the cat, look how flat. No.
It's a weird twist in the story.
They buried the cat. They were very upset. They had a little eulogy and everything. A little buddy, 4-year-old, wouldn't give up. He said, he's coming back. He put food out every night for a week. Dad and mom discouraged him. said, you know, he's not coming back, son. Until one day they noticed that the cat food had been eaten. It was just a few days after the memorial service when they had buried their black and white striped cat. But there, Johnny, in the backyard, along with Buddy, 7 and 4, holding the gray and white striped cat, Meadow. Apparently, in the neighborhood, there's another cat that looks just like theirs that had been hit by a car. And so they buried somebody else's cat.
Really?
Oh, man. It's not good.
You want to try to bury the dead thing that is, it belongs to you. That's you think? It's a goal.
Well, I remember him being a little more fluffy. You know. Yeah,
well, I did not see that coming. I did not see that one.
Have you ever taken your car in for an oil change and a mechanic finds something wrong and surprise, you're hit with a big repair bill? We were just talking about this. If you have, you know, if you have a $500 problem that just pops up on you, most people cannot come up with the $500. They don't have $500, so you need to put it on a credit card or something else. Man, that sucks.
Good thing, though, is you get to help out the banks by paying them some interest, and that makes you feel good.
Makes you feel
about
much better.
Thing.
Yeah, sure, sure, sure. So when that check engine light comes on, you have that sinking feeling in your chest. You're like, oh, no, what is it? Get rid of that feeling. Get Car Shield. If your car breaks down, they take all the surprise away. If your warranty has expired, a simple repair, literally a sensor, can cost you over $1,000. Car Shield will make the process of fixing your car for a covered repair super easy. You can have your favorite mechanic or your dealership do the work. It's your choice. They provide 24/7 roadside assistance and a rental car while yours is being fixed for free. And by the way, you don't have to pay the mechanic and then wait for the check. Car Shield pays the mechanic directly. So if your car has 5,000 to 150,000 miles, it doesn't mean you have to pay high repair bills. Car Shield, they've already paid out close to $2 billion in claims, and they're ready to help you. Save yourself from high repair bills. Get covered by the ultimate in extended vehicle protection. Car Shield. I have it on my cars. 800-CAR-6100. 800-CAR-6100. Mention the promo code Beck or visit carshield.com and use the promo code Beck and save 10%. It's carshield.com. Promo code Beck. Deductible may apply.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. Glenn Beck.
We have a lot to get to today. There is a great story out of upstate New York where this couple who had a wedding venue, a place where you hold your wedding reception. They're Christian. They didn't want to hold gay wedding ceremonies there. How do they get around it? What do they do? So they decided that they're going to let anybody use it. You can use it, but a good portion of the cost is going into a donation to the family. What is it? Family Research Council. That's General Boykin's place, I think. So they said that we want to celebrate and we want to support traditional marriage, and so a portion of your money will be going to the Family Research Council, and that way they can still do it, but You're going to be funding something that you don't like. That's like me going and saying, I'd like to have my wedding catered by you. And they say, that's fine. We're just going to, we'll give your money to a Soros organization and Bloomberg Against Guns. Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah, I actually had this idea a while ago that it would be fun to do a weight loss competition where hey, you got to drop some weight. But if you don't drop the weight, you have to donate like a bunch of money to some terrible charity on the left, because that would really make you not. I mean, you'd really think about maybe not having that 12th piece of pizza.
No,
I didn't do it because I did not want to make a large donation to Planned Parenthood.
I know. I was just thinking. No, I am absolutely against Planned Parenthood, but No, I'm not going to say no to the pizza. So, I'm going to give it to Planned Parenthood and tell them to use it only on other services.
Oh, that's right, because it's women's health. Yes. I forgot. I love women's health.
For mammograms.
Yeah, right, exactly.
That's right.
There's another cool solution to this, too, on this marriage thing where, a place is hosting marriages and they have to, they want to be able to choose who they do business with. It's called the Constitution.
I like that one. I like that
basically
one.
Basically, you have this freedom.
It's kind of old-timey.
Of religion. It's an old document. It's dusty.
Yeah.
I'll say there's a lot of dust on it.
Yeah, bad.
But you should probably just be able to do the things you want to do and maybe not have to create art for others and bring people into your venue if you don't want to. That's another way of looking at it, though not really apparently legal.
I can't leave today without playing this. This is one of the speeches from
you're not going to. I've been trying to delay you.
The March for Life and for our lives. And I think this is, well, you got to hear this speech. Go ahead and
day in and day out, our kids are getting shot up. And the moment we speak up, we're scolded that we are not old enough. It is as if we need permission to ask our friends not to die. Lawmakers and politicians will scream guns are not the issue, but can't look me in the eye.
Some people thought she was maybe crying there, but she wasn't.
I just threw up on international television, and it feels great.
Yeah, and the fist in the air. It feels great. I'm guessing it didn't feel great, but thank you for sharing.
There's a bit too much love for international television among this group.
Think so?
Yeah.
Why do you say that?
I don't know. Take away a lot of their really terrible points, which we could, look.
Right. We spend 2 days doing that.
Right. Yeah. You wrote an entire New York Times bestseller called Control on these arguments, and we all know they're really bad arguments. But you know what? A 17-year-old shouldn't be able to debate you on guns. They shouldn't. I mean, I certainly couldn't at 17 years old. But the idea that they should be continually pushed in front of the media, that the media should continue to demand that they're on 24 hours a day, and that, like, you know, the families are encouraging that. Like, I don't think, as a parent, and I can't put myself in that position, but as a parent, I would not want my kid out in front of international media every single day.
No, and you know what? As international media, you have a responsibility. Listen to this. Is this, who is from CNN? I'm trying to remember, they were interviewing one of the CNN anchors.
Oh, it was Brian Stelter, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he had done an interview, and listen to what they say about pushing these teenagers.
Do you think in showing these kids so often as we all do, we're doing actually them a disservice? Because the policy is actually what's going to change this. The passion, I fear, will just sound like noise after a while, and people will tune it out.
Disservice is a strong word, but when I was interviewing David Hogg only 10 days after the massacre, there were a few times I wanted to jump in and say, let's correct that fact.
Let me stop you.
One of the times I did.
Stop. But I did once, but the rest of them, not so much. What?
Glenn Beck. Mercury.